everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through Time Lords and space, where four companions come together and talk about Doctor Who and the Doctor Who related universe. I am Dolly Domofsky, one of your intrepid hosts. Joining me as usual, Steven Strum.
Hello, that's me still. I'm Steven Strum. Hello.
And making his return appearance, Sean Norton.
Hello. Return appearance. Is that what happens when you miss a week?
I think so. Well, you've missed 2 weeks so far. Have you? No, you've missed one. No, you've missed one. Marcus has missed two. And Marcus, of course, our good friend is out today. He'll be back next week. I think you and Marcus have been on the podcast together one time in like the last 2 years. And so,
we got to do something about your temporal adjustments because you're way out. Like, well, then again, there was no Who last year. So, you know,
I was going to say, like, that might be true just by virtue of the fact that, like,
there's no technicality right there. But no, I could say, I mean, people confuse me with that older, more British guy all the time. So, I mean, we're both ruggedly handsome and we both talk funny. So,
definitely. We're going to talk about Knock Knock today, which was the fourth episode of series 10 of Doctor Who. I think they became series starting in 2005, and they were seasons before then. It's kind of what people have been describing them as, but whatevs. This episode, to give you guys a quick recap, Bill and five other of her student friends are looking for housing. They find a kind of weird, large, giant mansion. Its landlord is kind of strange. Landlord, played by David Suchet, I think is how you pronounce it. Suchet, is kind of running the house. Suchet. Oh, Touche. I think it might be Suchet. Yeah.
Get out. No.
Get out.
No.
anyways, weird things start to happen. The roommates start to disappear and die and so on. We come to find out that the wood in the house is actually made of these bizarre alien termite bugs that devour people and bring them into, you know, force them into the wood in the house, which at the end is revealed that that's the only way that David Suchet, the landlord.
Sushan.
We're going to Sushan. Is the only way that he can keep his mother alive. And so the doctor needs to figure out a way to save his mom, save him, save the students, and go from there. So that's kind of a quick recap. I want to get initial impressions. And since you guys always go first, I have yet to go first with initial impressions. I am going to
go first. All right. So
no, I'll go first this week.
I have one question.
Yes,
for you, Dolly.
Sure.
Do you think we'll ever see those five other people again?
We'll never see those five other people again.
Okay. Carry on.
Yep. Because after this, I don't know what kind of house they're going to live in afterwards. But
how sad is that?
I know, right? I like this episode. I wasn't in love with it. I'm glad that it was the scary Doctor Who. In every season, they have one or two episodes. It's more of the kind of classic horror, Doctor Horror Who. That was good. I like that tip. And I like the twist at the end was very interesting with the landlord and what we initially assumed was his daughter or his love interest ended up actually being his mom with the kind of the wooden dryad. I think those insect creatures were called dryads. Wait, but
why would it be his love interest? What the fuck episode did you watch, Dale? It's like, well, yeah, no, it might have been his mom, or he might have been like banging her. Like what?
Knocking her. Actually.
This is why we don't let Dolly go first.
This is like we're not sure. Well, we didn't quite know what was going on with this.
literally, one of the first things the character says is that he has a daughter. Like he refers to
established pretty early on in this family-friendly show. He wasn't banging the tree lady.
Whatever.
Carry on.
I will carry on. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I like that twist at the end. It's a little bit different. The doctor, of course, saved the day in typical, I don't know, it was, I guess saving the day was kind of a bummer because everybody lived. I would have loved to see people just kind of actually die for a change. And you brought that up, Sean. You said, are we ever going to see those again? I was kind of hoping we wouldn't. I was kind of hoping that this would be, you know, lead into more of the doctor being careless with death and not caring, I guess. But I don't know. It there were parts of it that were good, parts of it I really liked, parts that I didn't because of that that aspect. But if I was these students, I would have never gotten a house like this. Who signs a contract without looking at it? Well, all of us do, because we all have.
I'm going to say literally everyone in the history of the planet.
Yeah, we all use software. So, but I liked it. I didn't love it. To me, it's the least great episode of the season. By that, I mean, it's not a horrible episode by any means. And there haven't been bad episodes this season so far. It didn't quite get me as much as the other ones did. I did like this House of Horrors, though. The layout seemed kind of interesting because there was a tower and there was, you know, there was just kind of getting trapped in rooms. It did kind of feel Maniac Mansion-ish for those people who used to play that old adventure game back in the day. So I did like that kind of stuff, but I wasn't in love with this episode. I definitely hated the other students. I think Shireen was the only student that I thought was actually kind of, she was the one that you know, was alive towards closer towards the end.
I was going to say, she's basically the only student that's in that episode for more than like 30 seconds.
Yep. The knocking was interesting. That was a good, I thought the knocking was related to the tease at the end of last episode, which was the knocking on the vault door. They've done a good job of carrying things over and getting us hyped up. And then also the vault stuff at this was kind of interesting too. I didn't see that happening the way it did. So anyways, I liked it. We didn't love it. Your thoughts, guys? I'm sure I'll butt in later on too.
Sean, it seemed like you actually kind of made a joke about wanting to go next, so I can let you go next. I think I went first last week or second after Marcus, so
sure.
Oh, no. Well, jokes because Dolly got the episode wrong, but I enjoyed it. I thought that it was – I think that we're in a really good season of Who here. Mm-hmm. And
we are.
And it's getting kind of, it's almost like a good kind of boring coming on our show every week and just being like, yeah, this is really good. And like the relationship with the doctor and Bill's really good. Cause it is like, yeah, it's probably the best we've seen in years. And Mackie's doing a wonderful job. And this was a solid, it's another solid episode in the mm-hmm. however many we've had, three or four now. And I liked it. The only critique I have of it, I guess two critiques. One, I found it to be a little confusing. I probably should have realized it, but I didn't. I guess I had to rewatch it to kind of realize what was going on. Because like the tree lady at the end, the guy's daughter, mother, mm-hmm. controlled the bugs, but the bugs were like alien roaches that were found in the garden. But then did they become the house, or did they just become parts of the house, or did they wound up using the house to absorb the people? But then we saw that they didn't need to do that because they just came out of the ground and absorbed. So I thought that was all kind of a little convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible I just wasn't paying close enough attention during my two, viewings. But and then the other one was I thought that it was a really solid first 20 or 30 minutes of just like horror story, like a nice sort of homage to those horror stories.
Yep.
But then it kind of turned into a very traditional, like, who mystery, we got to help them. And, oh, man, we're smart enough to know something's wrong here. And then they kind of save her. And she sacrificed herself and her kid because all the years of bad stuff they were doing. But, like, there were two separate stories there that, it kind of didn't mesh as well. Like, I feel like this was almost the same issue we had a couple of episodes ago, but not as bad. Where it was just like really, really good buildup, and then boom, we got to solve this, and boom, we got to get to the end, right? And
that was Smile, right?
Smile, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. And then, I don't know. Like I had a really hard time, and I know the show we're watching, mm-hmm. and I know of all the things, like you kind of go down this rabbit hole where, like, what are you going to nitpick that for? You can just wave it away with magic science and stuff. But I don't know. I kind of thought, like, these kids being absorbed for energy to keep her alive or whatever they were doing was really dark and really sort of, you know, it was heavy stuff. But then the bugs coming back at the end, and her last thing after she was already gone was having told them to regurgitate the people. I don't know. That didn't resonate with me as much as it should have. But
I on that point, though, you mentioned just a second ago about Bill and the Doctor, their interplay. I thought I thought Capaldi's Doctor was phenomenal in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to the point where he was interacting with that one student. They were talking about music, and they're playing the Little Mix, right, which is the kind of the popular pop band right now.
Okay.
It was really interesting. He did a fantastic job. Just that, you know, instantly, I wouldn't say, I hate saying pessimistic, but right when he saw that house, he's like, wait a minute. This is a mansion, and you're getting it for next to nothing. Something's up. And you could see the Doctor's wheels kind of turning and stuff formulating in his head. And just very typical Capaldi, but it was played to played very well, which is, to me, different than last week, where Capaldi was this free, fun guy, whimsical, having fun, you know, at the fair, the winter fair on the frozen Thames. This week, he was the opposite. He was very much the Sherlock, the detective.
Yeah.
I thought that kind of duality of his character is interesting. So I think that was played off much better this week than it had been in the last couple.
I'd agree with that. I thought he did a wonderful job. And I thought it was really cool to see him sort of fish out of water in the first chunk of the episode. Yeah. You know, because, like, we don't really see too much, you know, with the exception of, like, Danny Pink and Wilf and those folks, we really don't see too much of, you know, sort of the companion side life. And so to see a bunch of normal kids, you know, but trying to find a place to live and wondering why this old man is hanging out with them and stuff. I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool. And I thought it was cool to see that the Doctor was really, really, really out of place.
Yeah.
like really out of place.
I like that she calls him a grandfather. He goes, really? She goes, okay, granddad.
I don't look that old.
I'm not that old.
It's like, well, yes, you are. Sorry, I got distracted for a second. My whole thing died here. I really liked that. It's just so interesting. It's like, I feel like so many of these episodes are really flirting with perfection, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yep.
And they just don't hit it. Like, I think when I get to the end of this podcast, I'm probably going to give it another solid 4 out of 5. And I think it's really building, like I said earlier, it's really building a nice season. But there's something missing. Like, I can't put my finger on it. Bill and the Doctor are awesome. I really do think they are the best set that I've seen on this show in years.
Since
Donna. I mean, I liked Amy when they sort of they transitioned that away. See, she had a rocky start, but I liked what they did with her way back when, like, she was going to get married and she freaked out. The Doctor didn't realize it, and then she kind of gets love puppy syndrome, but it's, you know, it's short-lived because we find out she's just freaking out about her marriage. And then her and Rory had that nice camaraderie, and the Doctor was her best friend. But this feels special.
Yeah.
And it feels unique in a way that the show really hasn't, in a long time. And probably since Donna. There's no mystery. There's no, like, she's going to save the universe. She's the one. She's the impossible girl. And I think we touched on this too. She's just a college or university student who's really smart and really capable.
And he is totally the wisecracking grandfather, which I think it works really well here. You know, he sees optimism in her, and he sees he sees, like, a really high level of value my medicine is kicking in right now. He sees a lot of positivity and a lot of future in what she brings, and so he's sticking up for her. He's teaching her, like, for nothing. He's for free. He's whisking her away. He doesn't really do this with companions, where he's not only just, you know, the guy piloting the TARDIS, but he's also their teacher, right? He's teaching her about the ways of the universe. I thought that was kind of interesting. It's something very much a grandfather would elderly relative would do.
Sure. Yeah, no, I I agree with that, but I also think that it was interesting that this was another episode that they sort of spun the expectation on its head a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, again, like, have we had an episode yet this season where something evil was going on? I don't think we have. We haven't had the pilot was just, you know, the puddle trying to find its thing and follow its programming. The smile robots were just trying to follow their programming, and they kind of went glitchy when things kind of, you know, went out of their parameters. The what was the last episode called? The one with the giant alien fish under, or whatever the hell, prehistoric fish. Was just, you know, that giant fish trapped and being used against its will. And now we've got this where it's like, oh, what's it going to be? Haunted house eating dudes? You know, we got aliens here. It's just
there
like,
is
no.
Very specifically evil going on, but it is in every single episode so far. It has been the at least, and I think they fail to express this correctly in Smile, but like the evil is not the alien organism. The evil are people. Like the evil are, or at least, and I don't think in the Puddle episode, I don't really think there's a human villain in that episode, really. But the other ones so far, there has always been an evil human exploiting the aliens or
not
something.
True smile,
mm-hmm.
yeah. That's not true in Smile. Because I mean,
like I said, like I think they do a bad job of expressing it because I don't think it works. But in that episode, he literally says that the human race is using the emoji bots as slaves.
Yeah, but they
slave race.
Right. But they built them. I mean, that was before the whole sentient terribly plotted ending where they're like, okay, bye, figure it out.
No, totally. I think they screw that up, but they're absolutely trying to make you think that in that episode.
Right. And it just seems like it's a theme of this season where it's taking the expectations and the established tropes and like Doctor's gonna, you know, foil a bad plot. Or, you know, a bad guy's plot or whatever, and they're just turning it on its head. Like this, and we should talk about this. This was a kid, like an old man, who never really grew up. You know what I mean? Like there's some serious psychological shit going on there, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, they like to Steve's point, they were doing, you know, he was doing really bad stuff every 20 years and just awful, awful stuff. But again, it wasn't really coming from a place of evil. Like he's not fighting Daleks. He's not fighting Cybermen yet. He's not fighting the Master that we know of. Like this was a dude who just like he was a kid and never really like let go of his childhood and never had a proper one to watch his mom die. And then all of a sudden, boom, alien bugs keep her alive. And like he never grows up because he's protecting her. And it's a fascinating sort of make you think episode. And that's really what this season is doing every week, at least so far. Is it's really sort of it's doing a lot more complicated stuff than just bad guy of the week. These aliens are, you know, attacking the Vikings, or the Master is planning to blow up the star. You know what I mean? Like it's very, very interesting that this is the theme, and I'm very curious where it's going to wind up because every episode is turning it on its head. And it's like the Doctor said, I think it was in the pilot episode, where it's like, you know, it's different. Like food doesn't want to be food. It's different when you're on the other end of the fork, right? Or you know, you think your bacon sandwich is happy for you or something like that. It's like every episode is doing that. And I'm very, very curious, especially with this mystery of the vault, where that's going to wind up, because I feel like that is one of the main things they're doing pretty much every week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice deep breath.
I really worked up.
Yeah. At first you were like, yeah, well, it was a good episode, but all right, that's all I got to say. 20 minutes later.
As I talk to you,
Same with me. As we start talking through things, you know, to the point where the Doctor, this reminds me a lot of the Doctor and Susan, right? All the way back to Hartnell, all the way back to the olden days where he's the grandfather, he's super knowledgeable. Susan is, and this goes back to what we said at the very beginning, where Bill is the casual fan that doesn't know a lot but asks a lot of questions, and the Doctor has to solve it. And he, you know, this episode had that too. They had the Time Lords, right? She brought up
those hints, huh?
Yeah, God Almighty. The idea of the sonic screwdriver not working on wood, if you guys knew that, because I think at one point the Doctor looks at the house and goes, there's a lot of wood. You know, like, it's going to be a sonic screwdriver time missing. But I think there were aspects of this episode, especially related to that landlord. I thought the landlord started off really strong, And then when he become when he goes from being like a 75-year-old dude to a 6-year-old bumbling kid, blubbery kid at the end, he goes, you know, that throws off character to me. And that, again, I think that's where the perfection could have been there. Had this stayed at that high level and really approached it like as this elderly gentleman who never got to live, he never got to live his life as a kid because of what happened to his mom. At the same time, he shouldn't instantly divert back to being a 6-year-old kid. And that kind of, that mood just didn't play quite right for me.
So that's interesting. I actually really enjoyed that. And I think a lot of that had to do with the actor. I forget
what you would.
His name is. I believe his last name is Suckett, I think is how it's pronounced.
Is it?
Oh, now it's Suckett. Okay. I think we've said it 4 different times this episode. But he was from, I think he's from a different show, right, in the UK?
It is pronounced Sous-Chef, by the way.
Sous-Chef, got it. Okay. So I thought Sous-Chef was phenomenal in this. And mm-hmm. I could see where you're coming from in terms of the stuff that you didn't really feel resonated. I actually thought that he elevated the material in a way that normally Capaldi does, right? Like he was such a wonderful actor in this part that he wound up really making me believe that this guy was a mentally stunted individual who, just like you said, never had that childhood. You know what I mean? The way he would flip it like back and forth, and then the kids were like, well, what's in a tower? And he's just like, it's off limits. You know what I mean? And then go right back to like doddering old man. And then to go from, you know, like, oh, I'm here to protect you, and they must be punished for messing you up, Ma. You know what I mean? Like,
I guess I see that now. Okay. I take back a little bit of what I said.
Oh, no, you don't have to take it back.
I do agree with what you're saying. He brought that character up, and they're kind of, you know, the creepy old guy, the mentally unstable dude. I think he did play that really well. To me, going back to being a kid at the very end threw me off. Like, I would have loved to see something at the beginning, or if they played that kid part a little bit differently. I think there's something that could have been there that still worked within what he had brought to that character. Yeah, he did do a phenomenal job, because he was that, you know, he's kind of likable because he's an older dude. And I did like he looks like somebody's grandpa, right? Somebody's grandfather.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can't really dislike him, because you probably think, okay, maybe he is kind of looking out for us in his own weird way. But at the same time, he is creepy AF, my friend. Creepy. Okay, Steven, what do you think, Steven? I want to hear you.
Oh, we are going to. Okay, so I do get to talk. Okay.
Oh, my God. I totally didn't realize that you didn't. Oh, I'm so sorry. You contributed. You went back and forth. Oh, I'm a bad friend.
No, it's fine. You know, that's what I expect when I come to the Sean Norton show starring Sean Norton.
And guests.
I'm going to point out that you guys did a whole show without me. But
the Lonely Norton.
I mean, somebody could have shown up on that show. I don't know how.
Somebody has to travel for work once in a while, but whatever, it's fine.
Somebody could have shown up.
Airplanes have Wi-Fi, I'm just saying.
Let's record on the airplane. That sounds like a good idea.
No, it's fine. I actually appreciate it, because I feel like sometimes you kind of I feel like you tend to like always go last on a lot of these things, and that's so I like to actually hear you so animated about the episode. Now, here's exactly why you're completely wrong about everything that you just said. I do actually like that. I'm joking, but I actually do kind of disagree with a lot of what you guys said.
We are, if I do have to find a dump button now to just shut you up.
Right. Yeah. You know, now that the next 20 minutes of this episode are going to be you guys talking and you just mute me and I don't even realize what's going on, until the episode comes out. I understand.
What is happening?
All right. Real good improvisation there. Sean just like, what? Okay.
It just went on so long. Good God.
Yeah, it was a lot like your whole bit just a minute ago. So, I was trying to say shit, and then Dally interrupted. So, well, I'm just going to say that basically –
Get to the point, Steve.
You know, our whole fan base, an apology for this segment.
All right. Goodbye. I'm leaving. Leaving the podcast. I was just going to say that I disagree with a lot of what you guys said. this episode is basically just like Smile 2, although less – bad. Like not it does a lot of the same things and has a lot of the exact same problems as Smile did, just like less so and not quite as egregious with some of that stuff, which is to say that it is very confused about where it is going and what it's trying to say by the end of it. And I didn't quite and I think, and now that I've seen it happen twice now, I think I'm starting to notice a pattern here, which is that I think what's happening is that they are but in this episode and in Smile, basically trying to arrive to a different conclusion than they set up for the sake of plot twists and to generate like a sense of mystery. But what they end up doing is undercutting their own climax and resolution by making it feel unearned, because it doesn't feel like that was where that episode was going at all, for the sake of like having a gotcha moment. You thought it was going this way, but it was actually going the other way. And that doesn't make any sense.
Interesting.
Specifically in this episode, like with Smile, it very much seemed like they were going, like they were trying to like lean into the like emotion stuff. They were like, okay, oh, it's all about it's about the emoji bots, and it's about like classification, sure, of your emotions, and like whether other people know about you and don't know about you, and like you know how important that is, and how we have to classify that stuff. And then it completely takes a left turn, and it becomes like, oh, I don't know, this is about slave robots or whatever. Like, this is about slavery and control, and like secretly they were good guys and stuff, and we're gonna completely drop all the emotion stuff and like the stay happy thing entirely for the sake of having this this twist. And then this episode kind of does a similar thing where it's very much, and it even along the way it sets up this idea that, well, like this is going to be a monstery horror mystery kind of episode with the bugs and the house eating people and stuff like that. And it's specifically the shot of the guy getting eaten by the wall or whatever. And that's a thing I feel like even that kind of fails in a couple of ways, in the same way that Doctor Who kind of often fails, in that it very much feels like they write entire scenes that kind of eat up a huge lots of runtime, specifically because somebody had like an idea for something that looks cool or creepy, and then that doesn't have anything to do with what's actually going on. Which is to say, in this episode specifically, it's the guy getting eaten by the wall. It looks grotesque. It looks awesome. It looks fucked up and weird and horrifying, and I love the way it looks. But then that's not at all what's going on in the episode. Like, it's they're being eaten and having their energy transferred into the house or whatever. They're not being like absorbed by the house the way that scene sets it up. But somebody somewhere had this really cool idea for how they could make that look really creepy and messed up and all that stuff. So that's what happens. And that reminds me a lot of things like the Smilers in season 5, like from the Beast Below episode. Like, oh, somebody had this really weird, creepy idea for like these kind of like smiling men that then like their heads turn around, and then it's creepy face, and then it has nothing to do with anything that's going on in that episode specifically. And I think it's specifically that was kind of at the height of like Doctor Who's marketability, so I think that was very much came from a place of trying to sell toys of this stuff. And, you know, very specifically, they had advertisements for toys back on the BBC America airings of that show, and Smilers were a toy and stuff like that. So, but motive aside, I think it's a thing that Doctor Who has done for years and years and years, to have these sort of like side things that have that somebody had, like, oh, I thought this was cool, so we're going to do that. The problem is, on a 1-hour episode that eats up so much time on this like visual trick that would be much better spent setting up the characters and setting up the reveal and stuff like that. And I think that's actually this episode's greatest weakness, is that like, I don't think any of the characters get enough screen time to like make me care about them. So by the time that they start getting picked off, but like flies, or they start dropping like flies, I just don't give a shit about any of these people that are friends with Bill. And as you and Dally kind of pointed out earlier, like, I can't even picture a single one of these people ever showing up in another episode in anything less than a tiny little cameo or something like that. So like, I just don't care about their fates. And then by the end, that stuff is being leveraged into this like weird kind of horror story of them getting killed or whatever. But then it takes a left turn to try and say like, ah, actually it wasn't his daughter, it was his mother. And I think that if the episode had like built itself around this idea, and I think you make a really good point, Sean, about like the episode leaning into this idea that he is like a man child, like that he never grew up and stuff like that. I think the episode could have said something interesting about that and about that kind of people. And I think it wants to say something interesting about that sort of stuff without getting too specific about it. But I think it wants to get specific about it. It just doesn't have any time to, because
that's the time. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. They squander so much time early on this stuff that actually doesn't have anything to do with what they actually want to do at the end of the episode. So by the time they get to that, it just feels unearned, and it doesn't quite feel like it's what the episode, like, I can't tell what the episode wanted to be about by the end, the same way that with Smile. That being said, I think that, like, it is less messy than Smile, whereas Smile goes, like, one direction, then another direction, then another direction, then another direction, and then finally lands on, like, I don't know, the Doctor wipes their minds, kills their entire race, apparently, basically, and then absolves them of all their sins, and then says, okay, have it out. Like, this episode is, like, oh, it's going one direction and then goes a different direction. It doesn't have enough time to play with that idea. That's not as bad, but it is still not optimal. And like you said, like, I think I like this episode a lot less than you do, but I agree with you on the, like, core concept of, like, it could have been better if it had, it was close to being something special, but just kind of misses it just by the way that it kind of twists itself around at the last second. But overall, like, you know, still fairly that aside, like that sort of thematic confusion aside, I think it's a fine mystery monster-y episode. Like it's okay. Like that, like I said, I love the look of the guy getting eaten by the wall. That looks great and grotesque and creepy. And then like the wooden lady, I think also looks amazing. Like some of the, like Doctor Who has never had a problem with like monster design and stuff like that. Like if you can call it a monster, sorry, you sound like you're gonna say something. Oh, nope. Maybe not. I think somebody's just clicking on their microphone. Sorry. But yeah, like that looks amazing. And like as a complete piece, if you're just looking for like an adventure, mystery, horror-y episode, it's fine. But yeah, I just think it, like, the what it's reaching for, it doesn't know how to reach for it. And this is something I think that Thin Ice handled extremely well and like, sets up a lot and does a lot more with the, like, overarching concept, I think, that this season is maybe going for of, like, oh, maybe humans are the real monster or you know, whatever. Maybe these aliens aren't actually all that bad or whatever. Like Thin Ice gets away with a lot of that better by it's got itself a really thin villain in that like Lord whatever pants, I can't remember the name of, because like who cares, but it sets that stuff up early on in the episode the way that Smile and Knock Knock don't, having stuff, even if the character's not on screen, the Doctor establishes those themes very early in the episode with like the talk of like, oh, history's a whitewash, Jesus was a lot blacker than he is in history books and stuff like that. And like, even if they don't show that like character who represents that stuff on screen, they are setting up those themes early on and playing with them throughout. And it, by the end, like that guy and his comeuppance feels earned, even though they don't have much time to work with him. Whereas in this one, like if they had set up some of the ideas about this guy being like a man child early on and like kind of, that's I think a pretty interesting topic for discussion about like people who'd never grow up and people who feel like sure. They need to be like they need to, whatever. There's not enough meat here for me to necessarily, go into specifics about what I think that they were trying to talk about, but I think like tackling this idea of like a dude with a very controlling nature over a woman is probably kind of an interesting field to discuss things on, it just never goes anywhere with that. And now I know my discussion was also super long just there, but there you go, that's kind of what I felt about the episode. I think I'm going to end up rating it pretty low, though. Not Smile low, but like middle of the road.
Holy shit, Steven. That was and you yelled at us for talking for a long time.
Yeah, well, if you fucking deserve it after all the shit you gave me.
I wasn't going to say anything. I think that's fine. Can someone explain to me why the walls eat them?
Because somebody thought that would look cool, and they wanted to throw it in the episode.
So that's pretty. So that's pretty much done. Like 20 minutes later, right? When the bugs just pour out and then devour these. Okay, just making sure because it was a cool visual. But and then I think the tree ate the other one once she tried to escape. I don't, well, because she got out, she's like, I can't be trapped. And then she ran outside, and then they heard her scream because she touched the tree, right? So, like, I don't, but I didn't understand that because he kept, I assumed the walls, you know, the bugs were manipulating the walls, but I didn't understand the point because they just, maybe they thought that they had to trick them because if they tried to swarm them, they'd run away. I think it's a
mix of, we thought this would be a cool visual thing to do and we're going to put it in here come hell or high water. Mm-hmm. And also we don't have the budget to do that 6 more times throughout the episode. You know what would be really quick and fast is some CGI bugs that fly out and eat people.
I think that's true. But you know me, I always look for the plot reasoning. So
no, totally. I think that's a very consistent Doctor Who weakness, though. I think that's something that they fucked up on pretty good. Like this, like inconsistency and like the abilities of their own monsters because they want to have like some big prestige piece in the middle.
Sure. But I thought that was a little weird. I thought, to your point of missing things, not unlike the discussion of the never growing up, which I think we've touched on a fair amount, and whether or not this episode was just too short again for its own good, which I think we've talked about a few times this year. I think it's interesting because we went from those two parters to these, and how many of these endings are done as just like, I got to wrap it versus stuff that could. It's interesting because I do wonder with this and with the other episode if, you know, I think it could, with a good script and a solid director, I think they really could be really, really good two-parters that really dive deep on these scenes. But I can also see it backfiring spectacularly. Like, if they go out, draw it out too long, I could easily see us sitting here being like, oh, my God, they botched the second one. Or, oh, man, they didn't stick the landing. Or this was way too long, you know?
This premise was too thin to support two episodes. Yeah.
So it's interesting because I think between this and Smile, they really, really, really have strong stuff that they could have done into 2 hours. I'm with you. It's interesting. So a couple of things, the lack of reference, like you said, to the screwdriver and wood, that's a miss for sure. The fact that, you know, there's like no knock, knock joke, knock, knock, who's there? Doctor. That's a miss. And then we didn't really touch on this, but the ending is pretty dark. You know, everybody lives. Her friends live, which is wonderful, even though I personally didn't like it, but I get it. But, like, the doctor essentially talked Tree Lady into committing suicide.
Yes. Like, yeah, which is bizarre. Yeah. He did that to that robot in
His premiere, his very first episode. Oh, man. We still wonder if he pushed him or not.
Mm-hmm.
I can see. In this case, I think it's kind of fine that like he talks her into suicide, like because like at this point it's a very unnatural life. I don't think it's quite
that
specific thing is that super dark, especially since like her life is being fueled like by murder without her knowledge or consent and stuff like that. So I think that part is fine. The thing about like, oh, I have to murder my own son to keep him from murdering in my name is definitely pretty dark. Like that she has to grab her own son and like evaporate him because if she doesn't, he's going to keep on murdering people.
You took the darkness and made it darker.
Yeah, well, there you go.
You're right. I was 100% right.
I was going to say though, if these kids, I mean, granted, like it's nice that these kids, you know, it's nice for Bill and stuff like these paper cutout kids don't die or whatever. But like, did that guy really have another 20 years in him to kill again in the next 20?
He's secluded. He's not mentally all there. Like you could tell that like he couldn't even answer who the prime minister was. Which when you look at it, it's like, oh, it's obviously a bait and switch to get the viewer to think this guy's an alien, right? But when you put it all together afterwards, you realize that like he's super secluded. He's just constantly in that, you know, that house with the mother tree lady and stuff. And yeah, by the way, Harriet Jones reference was in there. I don't know.
The Harriet Jones, the witch.
Who's prime minister?
Prime minister,
yeah. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, who's in the vault besides the sentient piano?
Man, like
bad guy.
It is going so hard in the direction of the master I cannot help but think it's a red herring. Like,
yeah,
it is
same
so,
here.
So obvious now.
So what's interesting is that the doctor says he's going in there to hang out with this. Who's ever in there, right? Which means whoever is in there, I almost wonder if they can't get out instead of the doctor keeping them in. Does that make sense? Like, they're in there.
No, because Narvel basically says that I'm, like, not letting you out or something like that. Doesn't he in Smile?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. It just, this episode felt like who's ever in there, they can't get out for whatever reason. But the doctor can go in and out as often as
he wants. It's clearly keyed to his, like, biosignature.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's more of that. It's keyed to his biosignature, right? But, yeah, the piano is interesting, which is very much a master type of thing. But, yeah,
it's so silly, and it's evil, but it's silly, goofy evil. It's like, I'm going to play this jaunty little
Pop goes the weasel, yeah.
Yeah, when I hear about
when the kids die.
Yep.
That is such a mastery thing, which... It does, yeah, like you said, it leads so hard into being the master, and also we already know the master is in this season, which, like, again, I think is kind of a strike against this being the master, like, them leaning so hard into it. At this point, if it is the master in there, I will be, like, wildly disappointed, because it is the most obvious telegraph thing they possibly could have done there, or whatever.
I'd be okay with, I wouldn't mind if it's Missy in there, not necessarily the master. If Missy's in there, I think that could be an interesting twist, because he knows he has a connection to her. I think more to her than just kind of the master in general. I think last two seasons proved that weird master Missy connection, right? So I think that could be a plus going into this episode.
Missy connection, is that what you
mean? I'm sorry, the Dr. Missy connection.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry about that. Yep. I think there's that. I think that's a...
I think Missy feels a connection with the doctor, like a really deep connection with the doctor. I don't think the doctor feels much of a connection with Missy.
Sure. Yeah.
I guess in those episodes they do have, like, the kind of talk about, like, why do you let Missy keep on going? And I think he kind of, like, has this kind of... At least the way that they've set it up in the past, it's always felt like more like he is in this sort of, like, neoliberal position of, like, I won't do evil, but I also won't do anything to stop the evil. Kind of like, I'll plug my ears and not think about the fact that Missy murders people constantly. Whereas I, like, thinking back on, like, the way David Tennant treated the John Sim master, like, he very specifically, like, oh, no, come with me in the TARDIS, we'll go on adventures, I'll do whatever, I'll lock you in the TARDIS with me, and we can go do stuff, and go on adventures, because I just really want you to be with me, because, like, seriously, I just want another Time Lord around. Like, I felt like David Tennant, at least, and it's weird, because, like, you know, Capaldi has never come face-to-face with that version of the master, so we don't necessarily know how he would feel about that guy, but, like, David Tennant very specifically felt a connection, even if it was a begrudging one, to that character, and that wasn't, like, it wasn't a one-sided thing the way I feel like it is maybe with Missy. So I could see it being him, but again, it's just, like, it is so obvious and telegraphed at this point that, like, so here's the other thing too, is I could see the master being in there, but maybe, like, the only way I can see this maybe working is if, like, more than one version of the master is in there. Like, if it's if the reveal is like, oh, it's Missy and Sims, and also here's, like, four other regenerations of the master that we've, like, got other actors to play from throughout the years or whatever, and, like, that's the reveal.
That was a rumor. Yeah.
And I think we've talked about that on previous episodes. So, like, if that was it, I could finally see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I do wonder if the multi-master thing, at least Sim and Missy versions, are going to play out with one in there and one outside. I don't know. I really like the idea of it being somebody related to the Doctor or the Doctor himself.
Mm-hmm. The Valyard, like, would be definitely pretty interesting.
Yeah, don't tell Marcus, but I agree. we'll see. I don't know. To the point, though, it's so, like, I feel like they're trying so hard to make us think it's the Master. Mm-hmm. That it's got to be, like, a red herring and stuff, but I don't know. I we'll see. I really haven't heard anything about it since we talked about it in the first week. So.
Yeah, I've been avoiding rumors and speculation, and to be honest, there really hasn't been any.
I haven't seen any since that. Actually, I mean, I like you said, I haven't gone super deep diving for it, but
it's I don't not to beat this dead horse, but, like, man, like. they knocked on the door. Like, it's not, it wasn't four knocks, but it was, you know, it was definitely like a three knock thing. It was definitely, that had to be an homage to the master. Like the silly, goofy, evil thing, that's got to be an homage to the master. Like the Gallifreyan writing on the thing, like that says master. That, granted, that would also say Valyard too, but like, it all leads to the, like, so much of it leads to the master at this point, and the fact that the master is, you know, visible in that opening credits thing. Like, man, if it's just the the master, if it's just David Tennant era master in there, like, that would be, it's so obvious at this point that it is, man, I would be disappointed. And I do worry that it's, that I'm increasingly worried that that's where it's going. And they think that that is enough of a thing, the way that they think that, like, oh, the dot, like, they haven't felt, I don't feel like they've done this in a long time, but like, there was a time where that, like, it seemed like, oh, the Daleks are back. It was like a huge reveal. It's like, yeah, of course the fucking Daleks are back, because the Daleks are always back. Like, you know, in like, I feel like in season 2 and 3, they really leaned hard into that.
How much better would this have been, this mystery, had they not said anything about Sims being a part of this season?
Oh my God, it would be like, this mystery would have been so much more interesting.
Yes, exactly. But by letting everybody know that Sims was in this season, it's enough to, I mean, all the speculation is that Sims is in the vault. I mean, yeah, granted, I'd love if this was a red herring and we're really being thrown for a loop. And I, part of me hopes that Moffat has one last trick up his sleeve. But at the same time, you know, I mean, what if it's another doctor? What if
you know, the Valyard, yeah. Like,
No. What if it's like Tennant or if it's Capaldi? I mean, what if it is another doctor in there that just,
but why would they be like super happy to hear kids getting murdered?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I just read, I don't know how true this is, that they're going to reveal what's in the vault in episodes in a very sooner than the finale episode.
Yeah, yeah. So, I heard about
that. That I see. Yeah, I don't think they're going to string this along for 13 episodes or whatever.
Good. Yeah, you give away too many hints between now and then.
If they touched on the vault in the very first episode and then hadn't mentioned it since, I would have maybe thought it was coming in the finale, but like, they keep giving away too much for this to be like a drag, long-term dragged out thing.
Let's get to ratings. Before we get to ratings, I want to read some of the comments. Sorry for missing comments. They've been on and off this last week. It's my fault, but I want to read some of the comments. comment from our dear friend Alan Paxton at Alan_Paxton says, an average episode is what I thought of Knock Knock, but always good to see David Suchet in action.
I believe it's pronounced Soma? Soma?
Soma.
Suchet.
No, I'm pretty sure it's Soma.
The vault reveal was very interesting, but makes me think my original theory that it is Sims Master is that Sims Master is possible, or Missy, or both. Ah, see, he's on the same tip as I am. So I say Knock Knock is our low point so far, and I give it 2.5 space woodlouses out of 5. Barclay Lucky at King Llama 00 says, love listening to the podcast to ramp me up for today's episode. Oh, thank you. Mike Zero at iMikeZero says, wow, Knock Knock was phenomenal. Great horror theme with a clue of who is in the vault. Definitely my favorite episode of the season. Oh, very good. Christopher Newnham at Kepperdork says, another okay episode. The whole idea of the creatures was great, but the humans were quite stupid. Yes, I think we all agree. Who signs a contract without reading it? All
literally
of us do.
Everyone.
Does the term?
Yeah, we should talk more about that.
some of the punch was taken away by having the victims revived. I also agree. Especially when the last few episodes are mostly about dealing with death. Oh, yeah, on point. Yet again, I felt the focus was the Dr. Bill interactions. Everything else was just background noise. The vault tease was great, too.
I feel like I didn't really talk too much about that, and I don't need to go too super deep into it, but I will say I agree with you guys. Like, the Doctor and Bill together are great. Like, the interplay between those two characters, even in this episode, is still super, super good.
Yes. And then at Savior Prodigy says, enjoyed the episode. Love the concept of the alien insects being the wood, and David Suchet's performance was amazing. Also, the vault reveal at the end. It has to be the master.
Say, I don't know.
I don't know. And then our good friend, or two more, we got at Kostuch, writes, easily forgettable, but I'm sure I'll enjoy it when they rerun it in a few years. And then Aaron Kelly at Scratty Bones says, I heard a rumor that James Bond is a codename for the Doctor. What are your thoughts? Aaron, always
good. I mean, that's canonical, so yeah, like, canonical. I don't know why he says it's a rumor.
Exactly. Space, what, woodlouses or space termites out of five, gentlemen?
Can I give half C's? Can I give
half? Yeah, you can give like half a termite.
2.5. Ugh, I don't even want it to. Okay. 2.5 termites out of five on this one.
So there were space roaches.
There were, well, yeah, it's true. Space roaches.
No, they're dryads and then they're lice. Dry. I think
yeah. Calls them, so. Yeah. Sean?
You know, there are, man. The letters, the readers, they really reminded me of a couple of things that did wind up irking me that I forgot about.
The contract.
Like, yeah. Well, I mean, just like they all acted so weird. And I don't know if it was a directional thing or they just kind of wanted the story to flow that way. But like, you go back to when their friend was trapped in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really freak out too much. And then the guy, like the landlord, just pops up and he's like, ooh, that's a shame.
Yeah. What about when the one kid goes, the Doctor, legend. It's like, wait, well, how do you know he's a legend?
Well, because he's the teacher.
He's the teacher. I know.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I felt like that's how we all would react, and then we'd go for a fist bump, and he'd just be like,
I feel like that is actually probably one of the stronger moments of that show because it sets up the idea that like. Literally, but like Bill is literally the only person in the place who doesn't want the Doctor around, and like it does create this kind of like interplay of like, I don't want to have my like dad leave me and my friends alone. I'm hanging out with my friends, leave me alone or whatever. And he just won't do it. But then all of them think he's just like the coolest dude on the planet. Like, I think that's pretty, I thought that was pretty actually okay. And probably the best use of those like teen character or teens, I guess they're probably in their 20s, but of those university student characters. But like, and then it just everything after that is bad.
Yeah. And to the point that one of our cohorts said, it just signed the lease. This creepy dude showed up outside and he's just like, you want to see my house? Oh, here's this giant creepy house. I'm in. And now I get it. Like, I believe me, having lived all over, I was going to say, that's the first thing I thought of, like San Francisco, New York, like all these places. I was just like, yeah, that, but I mean, read the goddamn lease. Like, come on, man. And then, of course, the bugs like essentially raining from the ceiling, and everybody's like, this is weird. Okay. As opposed to like, Jesus. Sorry.
When they said the thing about the lease and all that stuff, like, there's no way, like, it's obviously the lease wouldn't have said, like, oh, also you'll get eaten by bug people. There was probably some.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, like, as an overarching thing for like the episode, some of the decisions made in the acting was a little left something to be desired, and or even the end when the episode just like ended and these people are all homeless again. Like, yeah, the one guy who's just like, oh yeah, I gotta live here right away because I'm getting like convicted this morning, and then the doctor's all like, well, better luck next time, and then the episode's just like, goodbye.
That's another super smile type thing where it's just like it understands that like certain economic and like social anxieties exist, but then like completely doesn't understand or at least doesn't care about like what the impact on those people is. And like, it's a super weird thing. It's just like, oh, we're gonna play this off as a joke, but it's just like, my dudes, this is like a really big world issue going on right now that is like affecting a lot of people, and that a lot of people are like really anxious about. Like, people are like becoming homeless over that, homeless over the shit. Like, maybe it's not as bad in Britain as in America. I don't necessarily think
that's like it's bad in London. I mean, it seems like London's another one where it's just
and it just feels like such a tone deaf thing to just like play as like a, well, good luck, kids. Like, oh, you crazy kids got to live with the consequences of this. It's like, my dude, like this is a really shitty kind of thing to be saying right now.
And it's like, I have to wonder, it's like, I don't care about them. In particular, I really hated the crazy eyed kid, whoever that was.
Yeah.
But like, I do kind of wonder, like, where are they homeless now? Like,
they couldn't find it. They're going to live in the TARDIS.
And, like, you know, Bill's going to go off and go to space in the future and the past and shit. But, like, are her – all these friends – I mean, now I think she got introduced to most of that group. But, like, are all of them now – like, are all of her friends just destitute and on the streets?
Like, the doctor says, like, back – the time to go back to the realtor's office or something like that. It's just like
– better luck next time. It's like, oh, man.
Like, yeah, like, I – It feels like a joke written by like old white men who did this stuff like 30 years ago when the economy was very different and like have places to live now. And like, oh, I remember what it was like trying to find a place, like an apartment. It was a real tough thing. Oh, that, you know, like let's make a joke about this. Like, no, like, yeah, that's still a thing that's happening, but it is very different in 2017. My dude, like,
you know,
trying to keep a home is really, really weird now.
Almost wish that as that house kind of collapses, the doctor looks at everybody and says, "Well, good luck finding a house." And then you hear the dun 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 dun.
Yeah,
come on. That's all, folks. Pops up.
And then also, like, I like that the doctor, like, is really concerned about the well-being of children. Yeah. Unless that, you know, after they get, you know, as long as they're below a certain age threshold, like you pass 18 and the doctor, like you're under 18, the doctor will fucking set you up with like, he'll make you rich and give you a manor to live in the 1800s England. You pass 18 years old and you're a university student in 2017. Fucking figure it out. I don't care. Whatever. Fucking millennials.
Fucking millennials.
What the hell?
So Stephen, what was your number again? 2.5 space roaches.
Right, 2.5 space roaches out of 5.
And Shano.
Man, I was a solid 4+ coming into this. Now I think
that 2.5 is looking pretty good, huh?
No. You project too much onto this. But I'm gonna drop down to 3.5. I really liked the first half hour minus the weird moments where the acting just was not there. I liked the last 10 minutes. So I gave it a solid 3.5 of space roaches.
I am surprisingly also going to give it a 3.5, but for kind of the middle section of the episode. I think after the doctor kind of gets introduced, after they get to the house and they say, okay, we're taking this house, some of that mystery is really kind of interesting. The space lice are kind of cool. I love the effect of the people melting into the wood. So I thought there were some neat things that happened there, and them just them trying to escape this house was interesting. But then, you know, it was bookended by there are no houses available in London, and then it ends with, "Sorry, mommy, I'm a 6-year-old, 70-year-old again."
oh my god, so, is this episode? Now that I think about it, is this episode literally just about like how much Moffat hates millennials? Is this just him just like, move out of your parents' house already? God damn it! Like, get a job, you kids.
Yes, Stephen.
Yes, Stephen.
Hey, I live in North Dakota. I can afford rent.
That's true. You can afford that mansion out there.
I can afford my $325 a month rent.
Before we put the ribbon on this week's episode, do want to mention a couple quick news bites. One, I don't know if you guys saw, but Torchwood is coming back for a fifth season, sort of.
Yeah, you know, audio form, like, I think it bears mentioning, like, bears, keeping in mind that, like, audio plays are not as small and insignificant a thing, or, like, almost non-extant a thing in America as they are in Britain, you know, like, the audio dramas and stuff like that are
they're big in Europe. So, Big Finish has reunited Eve Miles and John Barrowman to reprise their roles as Captain Jack and Gwen Cooper. There have been Torchwood audio dramas that take place during as kind of, they're not necessarily canonical. They're just kind of fun stories. This is supposedly canonical, takes place, well, as canonical as can be, takes place like almost immediately after Miracle Day with Jack and Gwen trying to, you know, figure out why things are starting. They're back in Cardiff. So they've got another big alien mystery brewing. So yeah, this
don't
is their,
say
they're billing this as they're billing this as the fifth season. It's gonna be divided into four chapters. It's called Torchwood Aliens Among Us. First chapter debuts in August, and you can expect it every couple months after that. So
I think this very interesting. This probably makes a certain amount of sense too, just from like a I don't know what what's her name that plays Gwen Cooper again? What's the
Eve Miles.
Eve Miles. I'm not sure what Eve Miles is up to, but I know John Barrowman is on some shit. Like he's in the Arrowverse. Like
he's in there, but his tenure in the Arrowverse is winding down pretty rapidly. So he'll be out of that.
I'm not caught up on.
No, I'm not spoiling anything to you for you, but I think contractually he was signed more to, he was signed to be in the Arrowverse through the end of this year, the season, which includes the Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow and even the Flash. I think he was
now Black Lightning coming up now too. There'll be the fifth Greg Berlanti Arrowverse show. They're just fucking.
Yeah. They just announced it. But so yeah, he's potentially going to be out of that. So I know he's been a big fan of. He wanted to get back to Doctor Who. He wanted to get back to Torchwood. Yeah. Never was given that opportunity because of Moffat and then the BBC's antics. And Barrowman was, Captain Jack was a popular character. So,
Well,
looks like we get to at least hear more of him. And if this is going to be canonical and fit right in with Miracle Day, I think I'm pretty happy about that. So that's one thing. Speaking of Big Finish, if you're a fan of audio dramas, the company now has a bunch. And they can be kind of expensive. I did take a look at those Torchwood episodes, and they're going to be like $25 to $30 each, which is expensive. However,
This is why I don't.
They're going to be what? They're going to be what?
They're like it'll basically cost you $100 to listen to all four episodes.
Hey, Deli, thank you for reminding me why I don't listen to Doctor Who audio dramas. I forgot for a second there. Right.
$25 to $30 per episode?
Yes.
How long is an episode?
Quite a bit. The episodes are like, what, 2 to 3 hours, somewhere around. But still.
I mean, that one we listened to that one time was like, the episodes were like half an hour long.
They were like a half hour to 40 minutes, right? Right. Huh. However, if you have Spotify, if you're a user of Spotify, go ahead and start looking at listening to the Big Finish audio dramas there, because many of them are up there, including Fourth Doctor Adventures, The Davros Mission, Unit, Fires of Vulcan, a bunch of kind of mainline 11th Doctor, 8th Doctor, bunch of Lost Stories, Companion Chronicles, Destiny of the Doctor. Some of the stage plays are up there, like Curse of the Daleks and Seven Keys to Doomsday. So there's some pretty cool stuff. Dalek Empire. There are a ton of them.
We got Wikipedia, Dali. You don't need to list off the names of every single one.
Yep. And more. So that's something to definitely take a look at. They are on Spotify. Always good.
Just weird kind of side note that is not directly Doctor Who related, but since we're on the topic of like audio dramas and British sci-fi horror mystery type things, quick like recommendation for people out there who maybe don't want to spend $100 for a season of a thing like this. Like I've been binging a thing called the Magnus Archives recently. That's just like a podcast you can get through any kind of podcast app. It is a horror, I won't say too much about it, but it is a supernatural horror audio drama with a good chunk of episodes that I've been binging through all week. And it is also very British and also very supernaturally. So if people who are into Doctor Who, I think would probably dig this, and it is free. So maybe give that a shot too.
Cool. Finally, the last thing I want to mention is if you are a Skype user, there is a Doctor Who chatbot available now that actually plays out like an adventure game, a text adventure game. The Doctor communicates to you through Skype, and you communicate back. It's called The Savior of Time. It's kind of an interactive game, Doctor Who bot, where you take on the role of one of the companions. It's a 6-part series. It's written by Joe Lidster, who did Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures, and it features Peter Capaldi and actually includes some of Capaldi's spin on the text. Is one of you in an airplane? And it's free. So feel free if you have Skype and it is free. You can help the Doctor in a fun little mission. Just do a search for a Doctor Who bot. Add that to your contacts, and you'll get a free Doctor Who 6-part adventure game. That's it. That's always fun stuff.
Very.
You can find us at Lonely TARDIS on the Twitters, LonelyTARDIS.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Wow, this podcast went quite long. You can find us individually at Dolly Domofsky. That's me. Sean, where can they find you?
On Twitter is the easiest way, at Sean Horton, S-H-A-U-N-N-O-R-T-O-N.
Steven?
It's at Steven Strum on Twitter, at That's Steven Strom. I don't really have any new articles that have gone up recently, but I'll be having reviews going up for Strafe, Prey, Fire Emblem Echoes, and what's the last one? The Surge here pretty soon. Cool. So if you check out my normal sites, Ars Technica, Zam.com, those will be good places to check up on my stuff.
Excellent. And you can find Marcus at Annoyed Gamer. Well, he'll be back next week. We may have our first special guest next week as well. I think that's the details have already been put together. Anyways, everybody, thank you for listening to The Lonely TARDIS. We'll see you in the time stream.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Wait, does nobody do that besides me?
What the hell are you talking about?